You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Over 7 million different animals inhabit our planet.
We're going to talk about the red colobus monkey. This is the most endangered primate that's not an ape. Okay.
What can they teach us?
Primate species, these monkeys, just their social interactions, their familiar relationships, they're just busybodies, right? And so when you think about ecotourism, everybody wants to see a monkey.
Many species are in crisis and need your help. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.
Welcome to All Creatures Podcast. This is Chris.
And I'm Angie.
Angie, great pick this week. This is an alarming story. I'll just start it off. We're going to talk about the red colobus monkey. There's 18 species. Angie's going to really dive a little bit more deeper into it. This is the most endangered primate that's not an ape. Okay.
Yeah, Chris, the most threatened group of African monkeys.
Yeah. 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 So great pick this week, though. They're amazing, and there's a lot to talk about with them.
Yeah, Chris, I was just really inspired to learn more about red colobus and this critical conservation plight that they're in. And actually, I was reading a children's book called Can We Save Them, written and illustrated by Vicky Malone. And it's a really neat book, and I'll talk about it in the podcast a little bit later. But it goes through the alphabet of species that are endangered. And we get through the whole alphabet with me and the boys, and I get to Z, and I'm excited to turn the page and see what species they are going to use for the letter Z. And lo and behold, it was Zanzibar red colobus. And I thought, I just didn't think that it was that alarming. And then the author shares some of these statistics that you're talking about here about red colobus in general. And yes, I of course immediately called you up and said, scratch the old or the new world monkey we were going to do. We need to focus on these red colobus. And of course, there's a lot of species out there that need our attention. But this week, hopefully you're going to learn a lot about the red colobus, and we'll get you excited about their conservation. There are a lot of groups that are paying attention to this because it is so alarming. So that's some good news that people are aware of this. There's a lot of research going into trying to protect their habitats and where the best ways to do that. But every single species of red colobus monkey is threatened.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 7 critically endangered, 7 endangered, and then the others are vulnerable. So one of the things I want to talk about today, too, is the bushmeat trade, something that we've talked a little bit about, but really not addressed head on. And I have some statistics there to share. Before we get started, Angie had something she wanted to talk about, this book, but I just want to say thank you to our Patreon supporters. It means the world to us. So I'm just giving you a quick shout out. But this book really was amazing that so much so that we wanted to do a species you found in it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I was just really moved. It is a children's book, and so it's always fun to read new books with my kids. And of course, there are many thousands of animals and plants that are in danger of extinction all over the world. But this book focuses on 26 of those species, and there are plants included. So that was really interesting for me to learn more about different plants that are also endangered. And from the letter A to Z. So it's really informative and interesting and fun to read along and learn why these rare and endangered species are so important, where they live, why they're in trouble, and of course, most importantly, what we can do to help them from disappearing. So please, if you have kids or if you're looking for a good present, you want to check out Can We Save Them? An Alphabet of Species Endangered, written and illustrated by Vicki Malone, and it's published by Mascot Books, and it can be found at Target, on Amazon, and Barnes & Nobles, anywhere where you can get a book. It's pretty popular, which is why it came across my desk. And yeah, we really enjoyed it. And most importantly, it helped educate me all about the plight of the Zanzibar red colobus.
Oh, yeah. So it's doing its job.
And, so thank you, Vicki. Thank you, Vicki. And it's beautifully, beautifully illustrated, too, which is, of course, always fun when you're reading kids' books.
Yeah. No, they, for sure, with my boys, too. Now, describing these monkeys, I did do when I, again, back in another life when I was helping volunteer bebopping around the San Antonio Zoo, I did get to help a little bit with black and white colobus.
Yes, that's my background too. Mm-hmm. At Lincoln Park Zoo, that was my experience of hearing them calling in the morning. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I just wasn't really educated about red colobus. And so, I learned a lot this week.
And looking at the different species, they look different than the black and white colobus. I don't know. So have fun describing this. I mean, there's 18 species.
Yeah. Well, of course, Chris, since there are 18 different species, I'm not going to try to describe all of them because they do differ in their coat and color patterns. But in general, they may have red heads, i.e. red colobus, often white beard. Some of them have more blonde colored heads and bands. But I want to focus a little bit more on the Zanzibar red colobus, since that's the one that was so inspirational to me. And the Zanzibar red colobus is going to have white around their black face and then red on the top of their head, and then just a beautiful white on their belly with black running down their arms and shoulders. And then midway down their back is this bright orange, red, rusty brown color. And so they're just a beautiful primate. And as I was looking through the different species, which I found an awesome graphic, I mean, some have more like completely red with just black high points on their shoulders. Some have a lot less red and just have like a red cap and then black and white in their bodies. So it really runs the gamut of colors depending on how much red, orange they have in their bodies. But most all of them, except for a few species, have a white underside, and most of the beautiful color patterns are across their shoulders and back. And then the tail is typically brown, red, sometimes much blonder. It can be black, and in one species, it is white.
It varies.
Yeah, it definitely varies a lot. But what does remain consistent for all of the species of red colobus is that they have a stump thumb, long tails, which they use for balance and posture, really long hind limbs, which make them leap from tree to tree, long fingers, which help them hook onto branches when they're moving also from tree to tree. But yes, we'll do everyone a favor and put this really cool graphic I found on our show notes so everybody can pick their favorite color, pattern of red colobus monkey. And yes, I tend to prefer the Zanzibar because that's what opened me up to learning more about the red colobus.
Well, and I really want to get to Zanzibar. That's like...
Like two slides on Zanzibar.
Okay. We'll wait. When we were looking at like honeymoon areas, which we got to wait till we can afford to travel. Again, it's so expensive, but we were looking at going to Tanzania and then going to Zanzibar for a couple of days and then flying back to New Zealand. So One of these days, yes.
Yes. Well, since we're on the topic of Zanzibar, mm-hmm. Chris, I was so close. I did fly to Tanzania, but I flew to Arusha because I spent a week and a half collecting data on wildebeest in Tarangire National Park in western Tanzania. So I did not fly into Dar es Salaam, which is, mm-hmm. of course, the capital of Tanzania, and that would have been like the gateway to Zanzibar. So but now that I'm back across the world from there, I'm like, that was so stupid. Like, I should have
so close.
You know, I mean, I was working. I mean, at the time, I mean, the zoo was gracious enough to let me take a couple weeks off and mm-hmm. do this. And so, I mean, obviously, I could have just stayed in Africa and traveled around mm-hmm. For months and years on end. But the trip was only a couple weeks. I did spend some time in Zambia with John and Allison doing rhino stuff, visiting her. So I had to pick. You have to pick and choose, right?
Yeah, and you do. You do.
But now that I was learning about Zanzibar this week, I'm kicking myself for not picking Zanzibar. Oh. So just for our listeners out there that aren't familiar, it's an island off the east coast of Tanzania. People probably know it for being famous for its spices. It's a really major part of Zanzibar's economy. But the other thing, too, to keep in mind is Zanzibar is not just one island. It's actually an archipelago of islands located in the Indian Ocean. And the total population is 1.3 million people, which I didn't really expect that.
It's a big island, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But learning about Zanzibar, too, is besides being home to the critically endangered Zanzibar red colobus monkey, there is also the Zanzibar cervelline gennet, which would be fun to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And the most likely extinct Zanzibar leopard, but recent potential sightings. So I thought of you. I know you love those. Just some really cool creatures on this island. In fact, the Zanzibar cervelline gennet wasn't discovered until in the 1990s.
Oh, wow.
It was only first photographed in 2003.
Yeah, we're still finding new species all the time.
Right?
I mean, all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just last fun fact about Zanzibar is Freddie Mercury, the lead singer of Queen, was born in Zanzibar. And
yeah.
John and I are huge Queen fans.
Well, it was so the perfect ideal trip was to, for anybody looking for a safari recommendation, this is one I want to do. Maybe we'll do an all creatures one in a couple of years.
Well, I know Corbin's hosting one for a lot of his followers and his friends. So
he's hosting a trip. Okay, well, maybe Angie mm-hmm. and I will host a trip in a few years. That's our goal for the podcast. But I think it was I forgot where we flew in, but it was getting up to the Serengeti. It was looking at going to Ngorongoro crater, which is one of my on my bucket list to go there, and then coming back at the end of the safari and spending two nights in Zanzibar on the sands there, and then fly home. So not cheap. So I'm going to save those pennies and dollars and overtime.
Yeah.
It's a dream vacation. But to see the Zanzibar red colobus would be wow, because there is so few of them. I mean, less than 3,000 left in the wild, you know, could be as few as 1,400. And one thing I did want to say about the colobus size, they're a little bit bigger than capuchins. You know, people see the black and white capuchins, right? So the red colobus on average body, head to body, 26 inches. So like 2 feet tall. Those tails are up to 30 inches or 8 centimeters. So really long tails, like you said, that are not prehensile, unlike New World monkeys, which we'll talk a little bit later. And weigh, you know, the females closer to the 10, 11 pounds or 5 kilograms, males probably up there 20, 24 pounds. 10, 11 kilograms. So not the largest. They're not gibbon size, but, you know, not tiny little monkeys. I mean, they're a good size. And like Angie said, we just talked about Zanzibar. So if you start on the east side of Africa, go all the way across into Western Africa, that's where you're going to see little spots of colobus, red colobus monkeys in Africa. So this central part, so going from Tanzania, Kenya, across into the Congo and that region of Central Africa, is where you see a lot of species of colobus. And then getting into the Ivory Coast, Guinea, that part of Africa, there's some colobus there. But again, you know, more than half, 14 of the 18 species are endangered or critically endangered. So their numbers are very small. Their range, you know, that's where they should range, but they're now in these small pockets. They're facing a lot. I mean, a lot. That's why I was not aware of their peril. And I'm so glad we're covering them this week because it really opened my eyes. Wow. Okay. You know, we focus on the bigger species or the ones we hear more about, but here's one that we haven't heard a lot about. And wow, they're on the brink, you know, so like Rewild, I was looking at the stuff that they're doing. You know, those scientists we've had on the podcast before, Barney Long and all of them that work in that organization, fighting to save these animals. So a bunch of them. Now, specifically the Zanzibar, pretty restrictive, right? I mean, because there's a lot of people there. It's a bigger island. It's not massive. It's not New Zealand size. It's, you know, much smaller.
Well, and there's lots of islands. And so the Zanzibar colobus is going to live on the main island of Zanzibar known as Unjuja. I think I'm saying that right. And I apologize to our Zanzibar listeners if I'm not. But they also live on the islands of Uzi and Vundwi as well. So a few of the different islands. But yes, I mean, on those islands, they are pretty restrictive. They prefer coastal thickets or bushes, mangrove swamps, but they'll hang out in farmlands if they have to or secondary forests.
And that's, I think, you find throughout other species too. So, you know, primarily arboreal, the humid forests. That's why they're this part of Africa where it's mm-hmm. warmer for them and, you know, all pretty similar environments. And kind of switching, transitioning to why care. I mean,
I think we opened with it.
Yeah, I know. It's like, you know, you're going to talk a little bit about this. They are prey species to leopards, which Angie has yet to see one in the wild, and chimpanzees. You know, you're going to talk mm-hmm. about that a lot. You see a lot of that with the colobus being mm-hmm. preyed upon by chimps. And I mean, they're seed dispersers. You know, they're eating plants. You know, again, just another critical piece of the food web.
Oh, absolutely, Chris. And I mean, red colobus in general, as you mentioned, are seed dispersers. And so they will definitely help maintain healthy forests wherever they live. And the other thing to keep in mind about red colobus in general is they're like an umbrella species. So the areas where the red colobus monkeys live overlap with tons of other species of primates and other animals and where they live on mainland Africa. So if you protect the red colobus monkey in their forest, you're going to protect so many other species and basically act as an umbrella, right? But there was a cool paper in 2012 that actually identified the red colobus monkey as a Cinderella species, and that term was new to me. Mm-hmm. So what a Cinderella species is that it's currently overlooked, but once people learn about the red colobus and see how gorgeous they are with their different coat patterns and just beautiful colors, it can make conservation more appealing for that area and help conserve not only the red colobus, but the other species that live in those forests and that forest habitat in itself. So red colobus, the Cinderella species. Mm-hmm. How cool is that, right? Yeah.
No, it is. That is cool. I have not heard that term. So there you go. That's a new one.
And then if you're looking at just the Zanzibar red colobus, because they're on an island and have such a specific niche in their ecosystem, there's specific plant growth and flowering patterns that their seed dispersal helps with. And so if we lose the Zanzibar red colobus, researchers are concerned that several other species of plants could also be lost.
Yeah, it is. It's the weakening of this food web, and we're seeing it around the world, but especially in this parts of Africa. You know, it's all the different species that are all hurting, and you're right. It's just going to have a cascading effect up and down the food chain or web.
Oh yeah, and the other thing to think about with this Cinderella species is that ecotourism is really important in Africa, especially mm-hmm. now that bans have been lifted after COVID and things like that. And no, the red colobus is not necessarily a mountain gorilla or some other highly sought after primates. But in the same instance, they are very beautiful. And I've been blessed enough to see old world monkeys, new world monkeys in the wild, and they're or under human care. There is nothing more entertaining to watch than a troop of monkeys. I mean, they're just not. I mean, we know I love hoofstock. They like to munch grass. And then, of course, the lions would just lay there and do nothing. Boring. Primate species, these monkeys, just their social interactions, their familiar relationships, they're just busybodies, right? And so when you think about ecotourism, everybody wants to see a monkey. And then you have this story of the red colobus. And so I think there's a lot of potential there for that.
Well, I know when I get to Zanzibar and, you know, I'll be getting some suntan. But after that, I'm definitely going to do a nature walk and not only see the birds, but I want to see these, you know, now it's a species I want to see in the wild, and I'll make it.
And I didn't do them justice. They are stunning. I mean, their coat patterns are just beautiful.
Okay. Now, one of the pressures that the colobus are under is the bushmeat trade. And we've talked about the bushmeat trade off and on, but I've never really jumped into it and kind of explained it a little bit. And for the listeners that aren't very aware of it, the bushmeat trade is the commercial hunting and selling of wild animals for food. Okay. Now, obviously, since the dawn of time for Homo sapiens, we've hunted to survive, right? And really, it's the illegal bushmeat trade that is really hurting a lot of endangered species. This isn't about hunting. This is about the illegal hunting, and especially of endangered species. Because obviously, there's people that do hunt. That's different with deer tags, things like that. And then there is indigenous peoples around the world that depend on hunting for food. You know, the Inuits in Alaska still hunt whales and seals and walrus to survive. There's tribes in Africa that still hunt to survive, South America, Asia. And what's changed is as we've become more quote unquote civilized, but agriculture, right, has changed where we have domesticated animals that we no longer need to go out and spend energy trying to hunt to survive. But there are still cultures and societies around the world that their whole lives depend on that. Okay. That is not what the bushmeat trade is. That it's not hunting of wild animals. It is the illegal hunting of wild animals. And to summarize all this, I found, you might know about this author. I think most people know her name, Jane Goodall.
Just a little bit. A little hero of mine and yours. We got to meet in person a few years back. And need to get her on the podcast for sure.
That is a major goal of ours. And I did get to spend 5 minutes with her and listen after one of her talks. Fascinating. One of my heroes since I was a little boy. And this was, you know, a few years back, she wrote The Illegal Commercial Bush Meat Trade in Central and West Africa. And so she breaks this down a little bit more. So really, the bushmeat trade took off in the 1980s. And this is when Central Africa or this western parts of Africa started to be exploited, the resources being harvested. Really, logging companies have came in to harvest wood. And then that brought in mine development, brought in oil development. So what this did is it opened up these parts of the forests that were very hard to get to. So all of these logging roads and everything allowed people to really penetrate deeper into the Congo and other parts of Africa where it was really, really tough to go. So she's obviously doing this from the chimpanzee point of view. Mm-hmm. This is why chimpanzees are in so much trouble now. These areas were inaccessible to people before. Now they are. So now hunters, these bushmeat hunters, will use these roads now to get into parts of the forest to hunt and trap wild animals. Then they would, you know, take the meat, put them on logging trucks. I read stories where they threaten the logging trucks or the trucks, you take this into town, deliver it here or else. But they've traced bushmeat, you know, not only the big cities of Africa, but even overseas to African communities. So these animals are being killed illegally, harvested, the meat harvested, dried or packaged, and now they're finding it, you know, through the black market being shipped everywhere. Jane writes about why, you know, not only is this a massive danger to the animals, right? And I've got some statistics here in a second. You know, obviously it's causing extinction. This is one of the reasons the red colobus are in so much trouble. But it's also a massive danger to us as people. And one of the things, and I've studied this before in past life before I went to graduate school, but diseases, Ebola, right? So Ebola virus is one of the scariest viruses known to man. It's a hemorrhagic fever. It basically liquefies your cells. And so you die within a matter of days if you get Ebola. Most people do. Depends on the strain. Obviously, there's different strains, but very, very scary disease. And right now, what we think happens is the Ebola is transmitted by fruit bats, that the bat feces contaminate fruit that the chimpanzees eat, or gorillas, or bonobos. And they carry this virus, then humans will eat the meat of these animals and get Ebola, right? So that's a very scary disease that a few years ago, there was an outbreak in the U.S. I remember that in Dallas, Texas, and people had Ebola. I think most people survived, thankfully, because it wasn't as deadly a strain. The other one's HIV that causes AIDS, and this has affected my own family, you know, without getting into too many details. But, you know, this was a virus that originated in chimpanzees, and they think, you know, eating the meat somehow, you know, or the interacting with the blood somehow infected the first human, and then it spread from there. Monkeypox has been making it up in the news. African squirrels, carry it. And so eating African squirrels, that's a bush meat that people eat, has transmitted monkeypox. So now that we've all kind of are still in the end of this pandemic of COVID, realize how these viruses can be such a danger to us. So that's a reason the bush meat trade is can be a little bit scary. Now, just looking at data, some of this is hard to really estimate because a lot of it's underground. But last year, it's estimated just in the Democratic Republic of Congo that over 1 million tons of bushmeat went to the markets.
That's too many. Way too much.
Right now, there's in that part of Africa, Central West Africa, roughly 5 million tons of bushmeat is consumed every year. So Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda. So it's a massive, massive problem. Now, when we look at what is in the bushmeat, that's not just monkeys. Okay, so let's what do we consider bushmeat? 81% of the bushmeat was ungulates. Okay, those are Angie's favorites, the hooves, the horns. You know, zebra or gazelle or all these different types of ungulates. I've got some data on that. 7% are primates. So this is where our red colobus fall in. 5% rodents, 3% birds, 3% carnivores, and 1% pangolins. Okay. Now, pangolins are still the number one trafficked animal in the world. That is for their scales, not so much their meat, even though they do eat their meat. It's the scales that are nothing but fingernails, keratin. But again, there's this myth. It's medicine, which it's not, right? We've covered that. All right. Of the ungulates, dictics were one of the largest. So I know that's a species we want to cover in the future.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. Buffalo, impalas, wildebeest, bush pigs, warthogs, like I said, zebras, gazelles, elands, hartebeests. Those were the most hunted for the bushmeat. And I couldn't get data on all of the monkey breakdown, but in one market in the Ivory Coast, researchers estimated, they did a study, every year in this one market in this city, there was about 9,500 primates were sold, and that included some Western red colobus monkeys. Okay, I saw pictures of it. Like, there was red colobus dead there to be sold and to be eaten. Now, the one thing I did mention, this is probably over a year ago during one of our episodes in Africa, was the data coming from Africa was, rhino poaching was down during the height of COVID because of a lot of transport avenues were shut down, not as many ships, airplanes, things like that. I think that's picking back up from some of the things I've been seeing across the news. It'd be good to talk to some of our friends that are over there in Africa and find out where we are going into 2024 with rhino poaching and ivory poaching. But the one thing that they did know went up definitely was the bushmeat trade. And one of the quotes was, the COVID-19 pandemic exacerbated poaching of wildlife for bushmeat due to reduced presence of law enforcement, because again, people were being isolated, couldn't travel, and also just worsened economic conditions for communities. So high food prices, supply lines were strained, and ecotourism totally died overnight, with a lot of this. So a lot of money dried up. So people lost their jobs. What are they going to do? To survive, they're going to go and hunt,
right,
to feed their families.
Yeah.
I mean, I see why.
Absolutely.
So to end this, what's the fix? Well, Jane Goodall obviously pushes ecotourism. So that is a big one. The other one that she talked a lot about was education. We've seen this in a lot of our conservation heroes that we interview, getting locals involved in conservation.
Yes, that is very important.
Mm-hmm. That is proving to be probably the best strategy. So going into these villages of Africa and other parts of the world, empowering the locals to preserve their wildlife, seeing the cash flow of people like me. One day I will get to Africa to spend as much money as I can there to help support them and help support conservation. That is one thing. The other thing that Jane does, she has this Roots and Shoots program that's pretty amazing. And what she talks about is taking these bushmeat hunters and giving them an alternative source of income. So one thing she's doing is teaching them how to farm through this program, raise chickens, ducks, guinea fowl that can be a source of protein for them, but also a source of income.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's finding these things, not bulldozing these forests to put a bunch of cattle out there. That's not going to help these people, but just doing small plots of land where they can raise some crops, raise some animals, bring some income in for their families. That could be one way to go. So overall, this is something I'm definitely going to revisit more, especially when we do like the Dik-Dik and some of these other ungulates in Africa. But that is what's going on with the bushmeat trade. It is still a big problem. It's been an issue for, like I said, since the 1980s. It's really one of the driving force for a lot of these species going extinct. It's just this exploitation, this loss of habitat on top of being hunted for food.
Yeah, Chris, we definitely have to keep our eye to, and it would be interesting to look at some of the pre-COVID, post-COVID data and see how we're doing. Are the numbers increasing or decreasing as we look to some of these more threatened and endangered species?
For sure, for sure. Now, I can't wait to get to evolution. Again, I love primate evolution because, again, that's us. This is where
right.
we started. This mm-hmm. is where we all started. So before I get there, let's just take a quick break.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Welcome back, Angie, and everybody else. So jumping into evolution, I'm just dorking out on this all the time. Very quickly, we know primates are mammals, 5,500 species. We've covered 50, 60 of them. We've got a long way to go. The order's primates, that's us, and the red colobus. So over 600 species and subspecies, and increasing because we're discovering different subspecies of a lot of these primates. What I love about our family, you know, we have the humans, the great apes, the lesser apes, this is the gibbons, then the monkeys, which is the old world and new world, and then our favorite, because we do tend to gravitate towards this one too, the prosimians, our lemurs, our you know, eyes, and we've got a bunch in there that we still have to cover. Now, for the red colobus specifically, so that's just the general picture of primates. So when we go from primates, the suborder is Haplorhinni, the dry-nosed primates, and there's about 305 species. Again, this is a massive, the old world, new world fall into this, you know. So basically, it's all of the monkeys and apes and tarsiers. The other suborder, we've talked about this before, is the Sepsirhiri. That's your lemurs, lorises, galagos. Okay, now for the colobus, the family is Cercopithecidae. So that's the old world monkeys. It's actually the largest primate family. We have 138 species. So there's a lot in here. This is our baboons. I go back to our mandrill. That was such an amazing episode so long ago. I should probably re-release that at some point. Baboons, there's some baboons in there we got to cover. The guineans, the swamp monkeys, so many, and our colobuses. Now, the subfamily is Colobinae. So it's very interesting. You actually have an African group. So the black and white colobus, the red colobus, and the olive colobus. Then you have the langurs. So we've talked about some of these. We did do the catball langur very early on.
Early, yes, and a wonderful interview.
Yeah, that was my very first interview. Oh, I love that interview. Niaga Leonard. It's my very first one, long time ago. Yeah, I should check in and see how he's doing. So anyways, proboscis monkey. That's one. Is that the big nose? We got to do that one at some point too. So a big subfamily. And then looking at the genus for the red colobus is Pileocolobus. And like we said, there's 18 species. We've got the Zanzibar that we're talking about. The Miss Waldron's red colobus, I'm going to mention later on, was thought to be extinct. Now they think they might have found a small group of them in the Ivory Coast. The Niger Delta red colobus, just a whole bunch of them. I think I'm looking at that graphic. I think it's through IUCN, or it might have been Rewild, that shows where they're at. The Ashy red colobus, all of them just beautiful, beautiful animals. So that breaks them down. Primate evolution, I mean, we go back, you know, the first mammals 120 million years ago. The earliest primates after that asteroid meteor hit the Earth, that's when we start emerging. You know, we're like the early prosimians, like today's lemurs. We survived that mass extinction, you know, emerged from there, and that's where we started to radiate out, because there was not much to kill us at the time. Dinosaurs were gone. What's interesting, Angie, is when you really look at old world monkey evolution, we don't know a lot. You would think we would, but we really don't. And that's because the oldest fossil we have of old world monkeys only dates back about 12 million years. And it's two isolated teeth. So I did a little bit more digging because I had more time this time. I'm like, okay, old world monkey evolution. And that's all we have. Now, we can estimate old world monkeys date back 65, 70 million years ago, you know, when we emerged, but we don't have a lot of fossil record, interestingly, with primates. And some of that could be economic, where in the U.S., you have a lot of amateur anthropologists or professional ones out there digging up bones in their backyards. So we got to get more to Africa and find more of these bones to get a bigger picture. Now, we do know New World monkeys split from Old World monkeys about 40 million years ago. And that's about it, like, as far as knowing about bones. So we don't know. Colobus monkeys, you know, they probably changed quite a bit in the last few hundred thousand years, you know, where you're getting all of these different subspecies radiating out. Just through DNA analysis, their closest relatives are the other colobus, obviously, and then you can go into some of the leaf monkeys or the proboscis monkey. And then offset the baboons and rhesus macaques are somewhat closely related, but that's about it. Like, we don't have a bigger picture, which is surprising sometimes with these animals.
Yeah, Chris, I found a little bit on the Zanzibar red colobus, and it's just thought that the population that's in Zanzibar has believed to have been there since on that island after the sea levels rose towards the end of the Pleistocene epoch. Mm-hmm. And that just looking at other groups of red colobus on mainland Africa, that they've been basically genetically isolated since the Pliocene.
Yeah.
So yeah. A long time. Yeah. But by having all this genetic data on the Zanzibar red colobus, there's no evidence at this point that there's ever been a bottleneck in the species. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's good. They seem genetically diverse and potentially can handle disease and things like that. And so it's definitely a species worth really putting our efforts into keeping the numbers up and trying to save.
Yeah. All right. So getting to some physiology, and one thing I really want to talk about is the digestion. I dorked out on that a little bit. I figured you might have too. Yeah, I figured you probably did too. Just some facts. Red colobus on average, 20 years in the wild, 30 years under human care. You mentioned their hands. I mean, they can leap pretty far, about 7 meters or up to 25 feet. That hand is really unique, right? That thumb.
Yeah, it's really like missing or a stump.
Yeah, it's a stump, but they have these really long fingers that allows them to grasp and swing through the trees. So it's almost like a hook, you know, is what I was reading, because they do spend a lot of time up in the trees. Just some differences I noted: old world, new world monkeys. The old world monkeys, think of Africa, Asia. New world monkeys, the Americas. Old world monkeys, when you think of monkeys, medium to larger, like baboon size to the colobus size. New world monkeys, you're probably looking at just a little bit smaller than a colobus down to our little tamarins and things like that.
They're so adorable. Golden lion tamarins. That's how I started studying behavior.
we need to cover another tamarin soon. They're so dang cute. Oh my god.
Cotton top, please.
Oh, okay. Yeah, old world monkeys, 8 molar premolars, new world monkeys 12. You know, fingernails and toenails with the old world monkeys, no fingernails in the new world monkeys. So, you know, there's some other differences too there, but really the prehensile tails, one of the easiest ways to tell the difference, meaning the old world monkeys, the tail just hangs. It's not used to grasp or hang on trees. It just, it hangs off their bottom, right? They use
It helps balance for sure, but it's not used as a gripping tool.
Yeah, like you see with some of these New World monkeys where they hang on tight with their tails and swing off their tails, things like that. Yeah. Now, like I said, talking about physiology differences in monkeys, because that's what we really dork out about is the physiology. So the diet of red colobus, it's mainly like they just eat plants. They're like an ungulate. They just chomp leaves, flowers. I mean, some fruit, obviously, but mostly leaf eaters.
Yeah, they're really adapted for this entirely vegetarian and highly varied diet. So they've evolved to become really good. Yes, they have evolved to become really good at breaking down all this vegetation, some of it being toxic.
Yeah, toxic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In fact, red colobus are known to eat clay or charcoal a little bit. And researchers think that might help combat some of the toxins that are in the leaves.
Yep. Well, I dorked out a little bit on this. I figured you'd appreciate this a little bit because I know you, the nutritionist in you, because that was part of your PhD and, you know, trying to help save white rhinos. You were so into the nutrition. So I found a study, Colobine for Stomach Anatomy and Diet, and Matsuda and others. So it was Japan and then researchers in the US and Malaysia were looking at the stomachs of colobus monkeys. Now, the red colobus has a four-chamber stomach, which is really unique for a primate. So like you said, they have this large sac. One of those is a priascus, which is almost like a rumen in a cow.
Right.
Did you read that? I was like, oh my God, this is so dorky. Yeah, it was so great. I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, Chris, it's incredible. This really separates them from other old world primates. It's really unique. And it's important because this four-chamber stomach does help them break down and extract nutrients from all the plant and cellulose material that they're eating. And basically, too, it enables a much longer digestion period. Mm-hmm. That way, when they are eating not super nutritious plants, that they have more time to be able to extract the nutrients and get more bang for their buck, if you will. So yeah, when you think of primate, you don't think of a four-gut fermenter at all.
Mm-hmm. No,
And so for me, that was just really cool. And this really distinguishes the colobus monkeys from other old world primates. So yeah, and similar to other ruminants that Chris and I always talk about that usually have hoofs and horns and things like that. And I don't necessarily know if it's entirely related to this four-gut, four-chamber rumination-like stomach that the red colobus have, but it's been reported that burping in each other's faces is a common form of play when red colobus, when young ones are playing together. And I thought, I wonder if that's because of this four-chamber stomach and that they're maybe burping up extra gases. And yeah, so the nerdy scientist in me wanted to know more about this burping behavior, but it also made me giggle because it reminds me of my two boys.
Exactly, yeah, your kids.
I think it's hilarious, and it's hard for John and I not to laugh too because it is hilarious. But I'm like, okay, there's certain places where it's appropriate to burp, and certain places where it's not. Mm-hmm. And there's silly boys, and so yeah. Really, really interesting. And then the other kind of cool fact with nutrition and red colobus is that they actually have specialized salivary glands, which are larger and also produce more saliva to help start breaking down these leaves and just kind of the stuff that's hard to digest before it even hits the stomach.
And it's not like fruit is very energy dense. I guess you can say it's a lot of sugars, it's quick energy, where a lot of these plants, they do get a lot of energy pulled out of it, but it's not easy. So they sometimes call them lazy or sluggish with the colobus, which harkens back to when I think of panda bears, you know. they have this carnivore digestive system, but they eat bamboo, which isn't very dense, energy dense. So I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know if they're lazy necessarily. They're as lazy as a panda is, but they the red colobus definitely tend to have these long bouts of inactivity. And researchers don't know if that's basically a result of having to work so hard to extract energy from their food, or maybe it's because they have a buildup of carbon dioxide and methane gases that stem from this diet and the way that they process the food. So, yeah, I mean, they're maybe not as active as some of the other primates that you would see, but they are highly noisy, highly sociable animals. Mm-hmm. And so red colobus in general are going to be diurnal. They're up in trees, moving around, looking for food, being social during the day. And they're definitely up in the trees for the most part. And the way that they're built, they just leap from tree to tree and move pretty gracefully through the canopy of the trees. And another behavior I thought was pretty cute with the red colobus is that they have been observed in the canopy when they're not foraging, trying different strategies to drink water. So they'll try licking from tree holes to extract out any water that might be like in a little hole that's formed in a tree. Or they will lick the rain or dew off of leaves as well as off of rocks. So what's interesting is this behavior is learned from troop members from one to the other for times when water is either hard to find or they're not able to move around a lot, like if their movement's restricted because their habitat's fragmented or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So really, really clever monkeys, which isn't shocking, right? We've talked a lot about primate intelligence on this podcast. And Chris, another really cool behavior that has been observed in red colobus, I just thought was super fascinating, is that during this time where young red colobus will need to go out and find their own, a new troop to live with, especially males, and that can be tough, right? Depending on how many monkeys are in the area and things like that. So red colobuses have been observed basically adapting their behavior and joining troops of green monkeys that are living nearby the potential red colobus troop that they want or hope to join. So researchers almost speculate that it's like almost like they're spying and trying to get a little bit closer to the troop that they want to join, but they can't, so they just hang out with the green monkeys instead. So really fascinating, complex social, just the social dynamics to do that and to make it work, right, is just, it's just really, really incredible. And then, of course, like most primates, when the red colobus are hanging out with each other, there's lots of social behaviors. They engage in play and grooming. They basically will wrestle and bounce off branches. So pretty fun to watch for the most part as far as all the different social affiliative and agnostic behaviors.
But very vocal, right? I mean, you said they are vocal. I mean, burping at each other.
But, yeah. Yes, they definitely burp at each other. But yeah, really vocal. And the Zanzibar red colobus, for instance, will primarily make vocalizations such as barks, weets, shrills, yelps, squeals. I mean, you definitely know who's dominant, who's not, who's interested in a female, who's a mom looking for her infant, who's not. So really social, very vocal. And then the Zanzibar red colobus also has distinct calls, rather to indicate when they're alone or if they're feeling threatened. So several ways to help the troop understand, help each other understand what the need is, for sure. And that's just vocalization.
Yeah, and I know monkey behavior is one of your things. It's just fun to watch. It'd be fun to study. So, but switching now to reproduction, I mean, obviously their numbers are so low. So what do we know about that?
Yeah, Chris. Well, in general, red colobus monkeys breed throughout the year. And as far as the Zanzibar red colobus goes, we don't know a lot about their reproductive cycle in the wild. They're difficult to find and track because they migrate around depending on where the best food is. And there doesn't seem to be a distinct birth season with the Zanzibar red colobus, but there's basically just studies lacking. And it does seem like most births occur sometime during the wet season. But still, we need more boots on the ground to learn the distinct variations of the Zanzibar red colobus and all of their reproduction dynamics. But it's thought that in general, they're polygynous. And because of the dominant hierarchy of the social primate, it'll determine which males have breeding access to the females. So, and how all those interactions shake loose depends on the particular species and how many of them are left. Because when they don't have these huge troops of 20 to 80 members, and they have these smaller dynamics for some of these more endangered and critically endangered populations, how they interact with one another is changing, right? So, but it has been recorded that for courtship, it'll typically be the dominant male courting and mating with the females in his troop, in his social group. But what's fascinating with red colobus is when the male and female are actually breeding, when they're in the copulation act, they're often harassed by other members in the group. And this harassment can include grabbing, twisting the male's hand, slapping the male, climbing up on his back. Just a whole bunch of, I mean, that's a great harassment. I can't think of any other word for than that. And it does depend, once again, on the exact species, how often they will harass other males that are breeding. But researchers basically speculate that this is just a form of competition that over time the red colobus have learned to deal with.
I love courtship, maybe slapping, like, hey. It's just,
I mean, like, give them some privacy. Jeez Louise, right?
Yeah,
my gosh. So those darn monkeys always monkeying around, right?
Yeah, always.
But when a female red colobus does become pregnant, her gestation can range from about 4.5 to 6 months, depending on the species. And when the infant is born, they have a different coat pattern that's much more gray in color and without any red on it, as compared to the adult. And so when they're about 2 to 3 months of age, that's when oftentimes the red fur on their head will start to turn and they'll start looking more like the adult. And pretty much from the minute they're born, a red colobus infant is going to use those long fingers and long legs, strong legs, to cling to mom's underbelly and just hang out with her. And the infant is completely dependent on her and stays very, very close to their mom until they're about 3 to 4 months of age. And once they start being brave enough and strong enough to leave her side, the red colobus infant will start engaging with playing with other infants. And that happens around 4 to 6 months in age, depending on, once again, the species and the individual behavior of the infant. The male red colobus, well, he doesn't contribute too much to the offspring development other than basically helping protect the troop from predators. And researchers believe that the red colobuses are typically weaned around 20 months of age. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's a pretty big energy demand and time suck. Mm-hmm. And so with that, it's estimated that the breeding interval is about every other year that a female red colobus will give birth. And so when we talk about trying to get the numbers up, it's a gradual process. It's not like they're having babies all the time. It's a lot of care and protection that goes into keeping young colobus monkeys alive. And typically young red colobus monkeys mature anywhere from 18 months to 24 months in age, and that's when they might immigrate to another group and start their life with another family.
Well, and you know, it's when you think of them being hunted, right? So every other year, there's not that many of them. It's not sustainable with, you know, 1,500 Zanzibar red colobus or some of these other species that are on the brink of extinction, and then chimpanzees chase them down, right?
Yes. And so, I mean, those little infant red colobus have to stay alive to even get to sexual maturity. And then they have to find a new troop to join and then basically acquire breeding rights at, you know, especially if they're a male, and that new troop and the predation along the way is can be a real major factor of selection and these decrease in numbers on red colobus. And you talked, of course, in detail about predation by humans in the bushmeat trade, but another source is actually chimpanzees. They really attack red colobus, especially young ones. In fact, there was a study at Gombe National Park in Tanzania that estimated the Gombe chips kill up to 100 colobus monkeys a year, which, depending on the numbers, is about a fifth of their population within that territory. And there was another study in Kimbali National Park, and then that has one of the bigger populations of remaining chimpanzees, that estimates the chimpanzees were responsible for about up to 10% of the red colobus death in 1 year. So, they definitely have other primate species coming after them.
Mm-hmm.
So it is important that those little infants stick by their mom's side and that us humans help make sure that there's plenty of forest for them and plenty of protection for them in the forest that they live in.
Yeah, no, it is. And yeah, like one of the species I mentioned earlier was Miss Waldron's red colobus. And I found this one interesting. It was thought to be extinct, and the last time they saw them was the 1970s. A study in the 1990s, for 7 years, they tried to find them, and they couldn't. So they were declared extinct around 2000. But now new evidence suggests that there is a very small number of them left in the southeast corner of the Ivory Coast. So one of the 18 species that, like the Zanzibar, really, really in peril. So organizations, there's a bunch of them. I know Rewild was one that I mentioned earlier, but what's the one that you wanted to highlight this week?
Well, there's actually a couple of them, I think, that are really, really worth noting. As you mentioned, Rewild, for sure. You can check them out at www.rewild.org, as they are making a huge impact helping Africa's most threatened non-ape primate. Also, I wanted to give a shout out to the Wildlife Conservation Society. They, as far as the Zanzibar red colobus goes, they have been making strides, doing boots on the ground type field work, more about their behavior, how many of them are left, how to help protect them, working with the locals to help stop the bushmeat trade, to help keep the area protected and get people excited about this super unique primate that is, you know, endangered on their island. And so, always a big shout out to the Wildlife Conservation Society. And then lastly, a lot of my show notes and just in general, a great educational reference is the New England Primate Conservancy. Mm-hmm. They can be found at neprimateconservancy.org. And their belief is that education is at the heart of animal protection. And they have a brilliant informational page about every species of primate for the most part, and what you can do for the animals and the environment. They talk about personal choices that people can make everywhere they live. You don't have to just necessarily live in Africa or Tanzania to save the red colobus. There's things you can do at home wherever you live. They talk about using social media as a key to helping impact several primate species that are in crisis. And they also talk about even things you can do in your local community to help primates out. And so I just love that website. So check out New England Primate Conservancy at neprimateconservancy.org or follow them on social media. And they're, it's just a great educational website.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, conservation tip of the week, it's like, go to Africa if you can. But, you know, that's a big ask for a lot of our listeners around the world. But one thing you do is support local ecotourism, find something in your own backyard. Again, we're finding out with the data that conservation starting local. So take care of your local species, and then we're able to build these communities around the planet. I will get to that part of Africa. It is on my bucket list. I don't know when, but I will. But in the meantime, you know, I'm down here in New Zealand doing what I can for our birds here and our native wildlife. So I would ask everybody listening, do that in your own backyards.
Yeah. And depending on your local AZA accredited zoo here in the United States, a lot of times you can help get involved with some of their campaigns. And I want to give a big shout out to the North Carolina Zoo. They have an amazing program to help red colobus called the Red Colobus Conservation Action Plan, which is supported by the Red Colobus Network. And they do all sorts of smaller campaigns locally at their zoo to help raise money to protect the researchers that are on the ground in Africa working to save and fighting hard for a red colobus conservation. So that's another great way that zoos can get involved to help save these species. So thank you, North Carolina Zoo.
Yeah, no, thank you. And thank you for listening. Again, check us out on Instagram, All Creatures Podcast, Facebook, our Facebook group. A bunch of great conversations happening there. Share this podcast, you know, share it with your animal enthusiast friends, talk about it, how we can help. We have to do it together. The red colobus, again, puts a fire under me. Okay, here's a species that's really on the brink and I need to keep working hard. And Angie and I are. We have some amazing interviews coming up that we have scheduled over the next few weeks. So look for those. But again, thank you. You're a conservation hero too. You're learning, you're listening. So thank you so much.
Yes, thank you everyone. And please let a friend know about this Cinderella species, the red colobus. It is a beautiful, unique species. It is really in desperate need of our attention. So thank you for sharing and thank you for caring.
Listen, learn, share. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.